That's going. Brilliant. So that's Zoom. And welcome. Yeah, welcome to our free webinar, seminar. I don't like that word webinar. I've just added it's a strange fusion. But anyway, let's call it an online seminar. I'm going to start with just some time arriving, a little bit of 2 or 3 minutes arriving in a focusing way. If you're new to focusing, just follow the instructions. If you're familiar with it, then do what you like in these couple of minutes. But use it as an opportunity to just arrive in yourself a bit. And ideally, yeah, be comfortable. You don't have to be sitting. You could be lying or standing. I don't mind. But wherever however your body wants to be. And it's not trying to change your experience. It's just noticing how you are. Yeah. And at the end of that, I'll read a poem, or at least some of a poem. Okay. And you can close your eyes or have them half open, or like just resting your attention ahead of you. Just, it might help if you do that. It takes your awareness inward. Okay. So maybe to start by sensing the environment around you. Maybe it's familiar or new to you, or you feel really at home there, or maybe it's something different. But just sensing that the room, the space around you, even the landscape beyond the room you're in, just giving a moment attention to this bigger space you're in. And the sense of your body being supported in that space by whatever you're sitting on, or lying, standing. Letting your weight drop, or reminding your body it can relax into it. The chair, if it wants to. And from there, sensing the rest of the edges of your body, your skin, your clothes. And as you sense your skin and edges of your body, also sense your breath. Maybe that might be easy to feel some movement there. And using that as a kind of way inside, how is it in your body right now? Just how are you right now in there? Just being curious in this moment. Feelings. Perhaps some sense of carrying your day or some important issues in your life with you. So wherever you find yourself, welcoming that, noticing, even if it's hard to be present, welcoming that. There's nothing here that isn't welcome. So take another minute, just quietly, continuing to notice. And I'll let you know when we're finishing and finish with the poem. Okay, bringing that to a close. And we'll end with the words from David White. his poem Start Close In. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing. Close in. The step you don't want to take. Start with the ground you know. The pale ground beneath your feet. Your own way of starting the conversation. Start with your own question. Give up on other people's questions. Don't let them smother something simple. Okay. So Malcolm. So a very brief overview of tonight. Yeah, I'm going to share a kind of perspective and a little practical way of working with this whole topic of avoidance and its kind of cousins. And then I want to talk about parts of us a little bit, how they work in focusing and what I mean by parts, and just a little bit about this kind of part that we're exploring. And I'll say a little bit about focusing for those who are new to it. And there'll be time for questions and a bit about what next. So that's our evening, fairly simple. But I want to start, and it might be using chat or using words, but I'm going to chat, if you speak something, I'm going to stick it onto the chat anyway. So a question, really. I just want to gather some other, on my word for this, but you know, other words that are like avoidance. You know, if you looked up avoidance in the thesaurus, what other kinds of phrases and words do you have for this in your experience? So I've called the seminar Befriending Avoidance. It was the best word I could come up with, but it really points to a whole bunch of other things that are similar. So I'm just wanting to kind of gather some of those things. There we go. Thank you very much. Procrastination. Great. I love it. So anything else? Denial. Yeah. Thank you. Head in the sand, yep. Turning away, I'm thinking that, turning away. Blocked, yep. Shutting down. Running away. Frozen. Hiding. Yep. Love it. Yeah. Looking the other way, numb, refusing, fearful, like they're coming in thick and fast. That's great. Cake. Excellent. These are the different ways in which we we find avoidance. We'll come to that in a minute. Cake and Netflix are one of my two favorites, actually. So welcome to those. Humor. Refusing, I saw that as well. Evasiveness, yeah, that's right. You're being evasive. Defensive. Great, that's a good list. Distraction, yeah. Excellent, more cake. So plenty of different... Oh, there's one more here. Chili. Yeah, they're my favourite chili crisps. That's maybe you knew already. My body stopped me. Actually, recently it's told me it doesn't want so many, which is interesting. I've actually listened. But yeah. So yeah, many ways in which we turn away from our experience or avoid something or turn away from something. It's so hard not to have a kind of judgmental. This is what's interesting about this. It's so hard not to have a judgmental take on it. It's like almost the word avoidance is loaded with this kind of judgment. So that's what I want to get under a little bit today. So it's the way I was thinking about it is it's a kind of patterning, a patterning in our experience. And I thought of three ways in which it sort of works, and there might be more actually, but these are the three ways I want to just touch on today. So it's a kind of patterning that would be about what we long for but don't get around to. So it's one, what we long for but don't get around to. That's one kind of storyline. These are three storylines of this pattern. What we long for but don't get around to, or what we need to do but don't get around to. You know, that's another variation of this There's another one. What we think we need to, but don't get around to. I'll come back to this one. What we think we need to, but don't get around to. So these kind of patterns. So in order to explain this, in order to explore this, I want to play a little bit. So with some open sentences. So I'm going to get you to play or explore or hold a real life example for the purpose of this workshop. We're not going to kind of go deep into it, but it will give us, I think, a flavor of where we're heading. So an open sentence is an unfinished sentence that you get that's used in all sorts of different situations. In fact, it's kind of unfinished in this situation. It's like a sentence with a gap in it, in which you fill in your own word. So I'm going to give you the sentence, and I want you to just kind of list some of the words that come in the middle there. So the sentence, and you need a pen and paper. Has everyone got a pen and paper ready? Or wave if you haven't. Great, someone's showing a pen. We could do it in your head, and it's not that complicated. So this will generate, I'm hoping, a kind of live example for you to play with. So the sentence goes like this. I want to, dot, dot, dot. I want to, but I don't. So what comes in the middle there? I want to, dot, 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 but I don't. So it doesn't really matter what comes in that space in the middle. Just let a few things come. So I remind you of the sentence, I want to, dot, 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 but I don't. Or another way of putting it, a similar sentence, I need to, dot, 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 but I don't. I need to, but I don't. And see what comes there, maybe something different. Okay, so now I'm going to invite you to write it and say it in a different way. So choose one of them. Maybe just choose one that feels like it's got a bit of maybe not the most difficult one, but just one that feels like, oh, that's alive. It's got some life in it. Maybe it's one sentence out of the many you might have written. For me, I need to watch less Netflix, but I don't. So that was my little example. So to find your one you're working with and want to explore, and then instead of saying I need to or I want to, say the following. Something in me wants to, dot, 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 and something in me doesn't want to. Something like that. Something in me wants to. And something in me doesn't want to. And end those sentences and see what happens there. Or even in something else in me. Does something in me wants to, da, 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 and something else in me doesn't want to. Or play with that a little until you find something that kind of fits what you've written. It might vary a little. And say it to yourself and see how it feels to say it the second way, rather than I want to and I don't, but I don't. Something in me wants to, and something else in me doesn't want to. Okay. So, I'm interested in what you noticed, if you felt a difference or a sense of difference in saying it that way. What that, and anything, it might have been subtle, it may be like, no difference, that's okay. So let's just, hear, or you can type it also. Very happy for either of those. Did it feel different to frame it differently like that in language? Or indeed, if you had to kind of shift it around to make it work a bit for you. Or if it didn't work, that's also fine. I say work, it didn't bring a difference. Yeah. So it gives you a break from I should get X. The should, you mean, gives you a break from the should. Yeah. Yeah, I know, that's right. I suddenly felt a little bit more just like, oh, I could just a little bit more breath in my body and a bit more space. Like, all right, okay, this is what's happening. Less crowded in, less judgmental about it, and just a bit more curious. It was subtle. It wasn't like suddenly I could love everyone in there, but it was like, oh, okay. It made it a bit clearer. There were two parts, two voices. So that's what happened to me.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please. Anyone's welcome to say something. Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that it made me feel more kind of empowered.
Mm-hmm.
Like to say, I want to, but I don't. It's almost like I'm the victim of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it feels like it's more empowered and taking responsibility.
Yeah.
The fact that I don't.
Yeah. Mm. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. That's good to bring that out and draw that point out. Yeah. We end up feeling the victim of parts of ourselves. I mean, how do we have this term, don't we? Self-sabotage, that wasn't listed. And there's some sense in which that sort of has some truth in it, as in it's very hard sometimes. We feel like we don't have a choice, yeah. Also, more things will come in. Yeah, the complexity of the problem gets a bit clearer. Yeah, different aspects can be recognized. Yeah, I like that. And yeah, this one, Teresa says, the exercise makes me want to understand why the inner conflict. So bring some interest. Some kind of, oh, yeah. Yeah, and I felt more understanding, particularly with something in me doesn't want to. Yeah, that's right. That's the one that normally gets labeled and judged and like, yeah, you're being avoidant, you're in denial, you're avoidant, none of them are totally friendly. So yeah, anything that brings a bit more curiosity to this part, I think is helpful.
Can I say something, Peter?
Yeah, please, yeah.
I had an interesting sense of something in me is pushing, mm-hmm. and something is waiting for that kind of divine timing of sort of inspired action. When is avoidance, the feeling of avoidance coming from the mind pushing with its time scale because it's scared to trust in that space of waiting for an inspired action to arise? And
Yeah, I love the question. Thank you. So this we'll come to a little bit later, I think, because sometimes, maybe I'll just touch on it now, sometimes what we call avoidance is actually a deeper knowing. Like it's like actually something in you knows it's you need to wait. Oh, and I call it something. We're not out of adequate terms here, but you could call it a deeper knowing or deeper wisdom or a, is it a part? I don't know. I don't want to get too defined in that, but there is a sense in which there is a bigger knowing in this, right? That's what focusing points to, one of the things it points to. So, and that's the one that's going, no, wait, don't do this action. Don't do that. And from the outside, it might look the same. Like it might look like, why am I just not getting around to this thing? Or why am I not doing it? It's because it knows that now isn't the time, or it knows that you need to do something else. So it's like a much deeper wisdom that's at play. So it's actually, I mean, does that make sense? Does that resonate with what your question is? Yeah. And so the part of us that we're really dealing with there is a part of the pushing. That's that pattern I mentioned when we think we need to, but we don't get around to it. So we think something in us is like, oh, I really need to get on with this, or this is so important. You know, it's got this kind of agenda and like, rah, 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 rah. But like the rest of us is going, not the right time. Not. just whatever it, knowing it has. So yeah, it's a different kind of patterning in this process. It's lovely when it happens, when you realize that you think, oh God, I'm not avoiding it. It's just like, it's not the right thing. It's not the right time. Yeah. Yeah. So that's one ways in which it manifests. And we don't know. We just from the top down, it's just really hard to see sometimes. All we see is blockage. All we see is something not happening, or part of us sees. Yeah. So I'll come back to that, because there's a kind of that fits in with a sort of four kinds of sort of blockage that we'll look at in a minute later. But anything else that anyone observed? The shift from I to really something in me. I mean, that's the kind of key shift here. And if you're familiar with focusing, you will be familiar with this. And if it's new to you, it is in our everyday language, even, you know, a part of me wants to go, a part of me doesn't want to go. You know, we have it embedded in our language. But something I think is more friendly generally, and a little bit less directive, is more open and spacious. Yeah, there was room for more kindness towards it. Thank you. Exactly, yeah. Great. So hold on to that example. You might refer back to it. It might kind of come into our conversations a bit. We won't be sort of explicitly visiting there, but it might be something that comes as I move on to the next piece. Peter? Oh yeah. Hi.
My internet went there. Is it just to go from I want to? To something in me wants to, but something in me doesn't want to. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Recognizing there are two parts. So whenever there's a blockage or some stuck action or something not happening, you've got two parts. Well, I just said that. I just contradicted myself. Mostly, you've got two parts. You get one part or a bigger self, or two parts of conflict, or something that wants to, and something that doesn't want to. And the one in this situation, the one that doesn't want to, is winning. If you like, the opposite of this is kind of addiction, if you like, or kind of, well, anyway, or the other side of this coin is something keeps winning, if you like, some behavior, some pattern that keeps getting played out. So it's not so much avoidance, it's like we can't stop ourselves, rather than we always stop ourselves. We can't stop ourselves. There's still a battle between two parts. So yeah, the key really to working with this area, with avoidance, with the opposite, compulsion, is to get beneath the surface, get beneath the labels, and come into relationship with the with parts, with some things. So I wanted to say a little bit about my understanding of parts, which I think is for me this has been really helpful. Some more general pointers, really. So in focusing, at least, parts aren't permanent. So there's not like this kind of sense of there's always some fixed kind of inner child, there's always a fixed critic, and there's always a fixed kind of ego or a fixed wise man. Or so there are patterns, there are things that come occurring, parts of it kind of come back, but they're not seen as sort of like blobs of yourself that are just kind of fixed. They arise in independence upon what's happening, you know. So critical voice isn't just there, it arises in certain situations. I'm sure you've noticed that some situations, like you haven't got a critical voice and you go to some meeting or something and suddenly it's like, oh my god, everyone thinks you're stupid, and it kind of comes, you know, poof, there it is. It may feel like the same one as last time, but it's so important to fresh it. It's the next piece, really, about parts. We need to sense them directly. So in the moment, what's it like? What's it like right now? Or if you're remembering something and you're focusing from earlier. Oh yeah, I'm remembering that meeting and this voice came that said I was really useless. What's it like right now when I feel it? So go into it, really so important to get it directly. It's not an idea. This isn't a concept. It's an actual experience. This is what it points to. So an experience is something that's lived, you know, that you can feel in your experience, not necessarily bodily. It might be bodily, but you can go, oh yeah, that's what it's like. It's like a really tightly wound up ball in my head or something. You know, you can find a way of describing it. So they're not permanent. They need to be sensed directly to be, and they love empathy. The third one, no, I have not met any part of me that does not like empathy. At least eventually, it might take a while to get there. Sometimes it totally depends off, but eventually it's like, oh, right, okay, someone's paying attention. They like it. And fourthly, I mean, because there's many of these points, but fourthly, is they can transform and dissolve. So parts, maybe it's this thing where they're not permanent. So sometimes it feels like we're, you know, okay, I've just got to learn to live with this part of me forever. Maybe there's an exception, but I think it's probably more helpful to think of them that they might transform and even dissolve completely. And that's certainly been the case of some of my parts or critical parts, just don't happen. That doesn't mean it won't come back ever, but you know, there's been some significant shifts and disappearances, for want of a better word. So parts, yeah. So just a bit of a general introduction to parts. Any questions at any point, please just do ask, chat, or just unmute yourself. And this is very much a focusing perspective. Now, there are other perspectives. You know, you get models. I was just at a weekend recently, and we were looking at this thing called the drama triangle. And we might have come across it. You have the kind of perpetrator, the victim, and the rescuer. You know, and this, you know, again, it's a way of looking at human experience and certain kinds of things that get evoked in situations. And yeah, it has a lot of richness in it. But I, you know, I knew from my own experience it's only a kind of map, not rather than the actual real experience. So specifically, though, let's look at this in a little bit more detail. Specifically, the kind of part we're looking at today probably is what I call a safety guardian. The exception to this is deeper knowing, which I'll come back to again. But what I call a safety guardian. So I've kind of, this term I got from somebody else, from Anne Weiser Cornell. I don't think she uses it anymore, actually, or at least not so much. She has another name for it in her system. But safety guardian, so this is a part of you that wants to keep you safe. You know, its job is to protect you from something. So some kind of inner or outer experience, doesn't really matter which, but its job is to make you not go somewhere that it thinks difficult or too much for you or too painful for you to experience or too painful to other people to see. You know, the details are very important, but we don't always know. All we know is we've got a blockage. So that's a safety guardian. So examples of this could be, you know, you're feeling a bit emotional and then suddenly you're at the fridge, like eating something. Okay. Safety guardians come in, taken over, or suddenly get really tired in the middle of some kind of experiential process, like, oh my God, the lights have just gone out, I'm so tired. Again, that could be a safety guardian at work. Or just you really, you know, you just get distracted suddenly, poof, you're kind of thinking about lunch or something like that. So these ones often operate silently in the background. They're not very in awareness, more hidden. We have that phrase, don't we? Something like so-and-so stuck there. What is it? When a dog puts its paws and goes, I've got the phrase for that, you know. Anyway, whatever that is. All we can see is, like I say, inaction or some kind of something not happening or not being got around to. Letters piling up on our desk. Emails piling up in our inbox. They were silently operating in the background. So they're more stealthy, you know, they're kind of often not so easy to spot, but their actions are. They have the keys to our body. So in other words, this kind of part can really, you know, hijack you quite successfully. And in terms of addiction, to put the other side of it, the one, the compulsive, the one that takes you over for action, for doing stuff, you know, definitely it's like, oh no, I won't watch another episode of Netflix. Bam, I'm on the next episode. Although Netflix makes it extremely easy to do that because it loads the episode up even before you finish the first one. How annoying is that? So they're feeding into our tendency to want more, which I think is really annoying. I think they should stop it. It does bug me. But yeah, that part, it takes over. They've got the keys to your body. Bam, it's pressing the remote control, you know, before you know it. Here's an important bit. They want something for us. So this is the key thing here. They want something for us. They not want something for us, funny way of putting it. They want us not to feel something. So they have this wanting, this kind of longing even, actually, or a kind of mission. It's quite powerful, you know. They really don't want us to feel that grief, or they really don't want us to touch that really painful sore spot. They really don't want someone else to kind of see some part of you. So they want something for us. All of our parts want something for us. But this one is nice. It's kind of good to get to that. Seeing if I've got an animal here to. So I've got a box of animals down here. So this is a part of us. This is a kind of fox. So all of our parts, they want something for us. They kind of got a job that they're need some repair. If they've got a job in our psyche, in our being, and they want something for us. And they love respect, and they love appreciation, and they love empathy. Especially these ones that are working really hard. They work really hard, these parts of us. Often very without any acknowledgement. So these are our safety guardians, and it's one of three kinds of part that we meet. Very broadly, three kinds of part. So I these days when I'm being avoidant, I'm like, oh, wow, what's going on there? I'm like really curious, like, what's happening? What is it something in me doesn't want to experience? I say that as if I do it all the time. I don't always, of course, sometimes I just get taken over by it. I just pause there really. So it looks a bit of general information about parts, not permanent, sensed directly, but they love empathy, and then specifically the safety guardian is part of us that's protecting us. Yeah, that is asking for curiosity and empathy and understanding. And just, yeah, see if that makes sense to you. Any questions about it before we carry on?
I'm just struck by how hard it is to kind of get underneath.
You know,
I'm thinking more like sort of more addictive, compulsive stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, exactly. It was really, is really hard. Because from its point of view, these parts of its point of view, it's kind of life or death. That's how strongly they feel things. And I was talking about this today with somebody, and you know, say we developed a habit around food when we were smaller because of, you know, emotional neglect, or in fact most people have stuff around food, in all honesty. You know, we try and fill some need, you know, nourishment through other means, and from that part's point of view, it's like I'm trying to make you protect you from something terrible, you know, like this terrible feeling, or I'm trying to make you feel better in a terrible circumstance, and it's kind of still got that job in you, you know, it's got life and death, you know. So why do I say all that? I guess because there's a lot invested in it. Maybe that's what I'm trying to evoke here, you know, from our part's point of view, it's like this isn't just a light matter, this is just like super important. So yeah, so no wonder it can be hard to, you know, like there's a lot invested in not looking at it. Yeah, in a way.
And I guess it's quite hard to really listen in an open way, you know, rather than listen in order to kind of get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I guess that's, you know, getting back to being self in presence rather than another part. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Just some messages in here to add on to this. Yeah, so the safety garden could be sitting on top of real trauma that is forgotten and unremembered by the conscious mind. Exactly, that's one way of putting it. It's been exiled, something's been pushed out of awareness. And the safety guardian's job is to like keep a wall around that. Like no one's going to feel that again. You're not going to feel it and no one's going to feel it. You won't. This is, and it may not even be a bad thing, right? Safety guardian could be sitting around your joy, you know, your exuberance, your... You know, lots of things get pushed out of awareness, aren't necessarily bad. So it could not even trauma, anything that's in the shadow, to use that, I've got two fingers here, shadow, that could be something that, anything that's deemed unacceptable by those around us, you know, gets pushed into a shadow and exiled. And yeah, safety guardian lives at that boundary. No one's going to see that. It's dangerous. So question here, or kind of my safety guardian is known to me as my rebel. Yeah, so rebel, exactly. But what is her agenda? Yeah. Have a feel into it and see what it's like in experience. You know, a rebel is definitely this kind of part. You know, it's definitely got the keys to our body. It acts in life, doesn't it? It's like, sod that, I'm going to do it anyway. And off it does it, you know. So it would take time just to get into a relationship with it and feel what's it like, describe it a bit, where and how you notice it, what's its energy, is it like teenager, is it like what kind of flavor, and then like what, and then gradually over time as you get to know it, as it trusts you, you might be able to feel what does it want for you, what does it want from what it's doing, what does it want for you? I want to be free. Oh, okay. Feel into what's underneath that. What does it want to bring you? So that's what I'm saying. Anyway, there's no fixed answer here. It's just really the specificity of it is really important in focusing. To really sense exactly what it's bringing you. What does it want for you? Yeah. And then I've just come back to Juliet's question. Well, we'll come back to that. I just said something else. I have the opposite of my avoiding unnecessary. Not a rebel. Yeah, it's someone who kind of doesn't stand up. But yeah, right. It collapses, would you say that? Oh, that's just my word for it. Yeah, you can have the opposite, exactly. Yeah. But again, you know, what's it wanting for us? What does it bring us? What or what need is it trying to fulfill, to use that language? Again, it sounds heady, but you're really sensing it and focusing directly. I like this word, what is it bringing you? Because that feels like that really gets, for me, that gets sometimes under the surface a bit. So I want to just talk about another reason why it's hard. Here we go, another question here. So I'm trying to get one of myself. So if we got a negative reaction to sharing joy as a child, then we could wall off sharing or feeling joy. We'd say to God, absolutely, yeah, that's right. Shit, like too much wildness, exuberance is seen as difficult in the adult world for whatever reason. So we end up, or the kind of parts of us kind of, okay, let's not show that again. Let's hide that away. And then over time, it's like it might become so unacceptable that, you know, like even you don't know it's there anymore. Positive aspects of ourselves being excited. Yeah, exactly. I say this because I met someone the weekend and it was very clear, you know, it's very clear that they were really joyous and really big person, you know, like quite like incredibly talented musically and really full of like joy and yeah, their life as a small person had been like, all that had been like, that's not acceptable. And it was a real kind of tragedy in a way to see their battle with it. And you see this with a lot of children actually. It just, something very positive gets crushed. So I want to mention critics just because, another reason why it's hard to get there, which touches on Juliet's question, is, yeah, we have parts of us that are critical. You know, another part of us comes and goes, yeah, you never get around to it, you're such a loser. No wonder everyone hates you, you know. So it starts to kind of be critical and judgmental of that part of us that's got its heels dug in, is not doing it. You're pathetic, you know. You'll never get around to it. So it's up again, it makes it harder. It's another layer that happens. So that's another piece. So I just want to return to this thing about inner knowing. So I know this comes from Anne Weiser Cornell. She says there's these four patterns that lead to blocked action. And we touched on some of them tonight, really, and this is just one sort of way of looking at these patterns. So a pattern of protection, which we've looked at, something trying to protect you. So you never get around to writing that book because you actually some part of you wants to protect you from criticism. Do you want to stick your head above the parapet? It's like, oh, okay, well, I won't write a book, then I'll never have to risk being criticized. So it's so desperately wants to protect you from that painful experience of being criticized that you just never get around to writing it or doing your blog or doing your video thing or whatever that is. So pattern of protection. The pattern of rebellion, it's the opposite. Come to the touches on the rebellion. It's like some part of you did. How did it go? I'm never going to do it anyway. It's like sod you, and it's kind of like it's kind of looking at the other side of it in a way. It's just like through sabotaging. Maybe that's the kind of rebel. Like I'm not going to do it again. It's got this. It's sort of a protective pattern, but a bit different. Rather than stopping, it's their action. So protection, rebellion, the pattern of unfinished business is the third one. So this is when there's something else more important that your inaction is actually about. So your letters piling up on your desk and your emails piling in your inbox and your aren't really because you're a bad person and inherently awful. It's because some part of you is like, you really need to grieve something that you haven't touched yet, or there's some other issue in your life that's way more important. And I'm not going to let you do that until you finish this business over here. That's really powerful when it's like it's got the reins of your body, and like, I'm not letting you do it until you look at this. And the last pattern is inner guidance, which is this inner knowing. So something you really knows deeply that some action is wrong for you. and won't do it. Unnecessary, unfinished business, like building. Yeah, I mean, clutter could be that. I mean, clutter. I mean, you know, it, again, don't look, don't judge it from the outside. You know, some people just like having clutter. It may not be a blocked action. Maybe just like that's just how they like it. It gets organized, you know. So that's okay. But yeah, if there's that conflict around it, then maybe there's some. It might be unfinished business. It might, yeah, for some reason something isn't getting done right. I mean, I have loads of clutter. It's because I just have very little time to do it, quite an 8-year-old child. So it's kind of a different reason why clutter piles up. So yeah, sensing the situation directly, so important in focusing. Don't go at the top label. The top label, this is really the big message of this seminar. Don't fall for the top label, which is that you're being avoidant, you're in denial, you're self-sabotaging. Sense beneath what's happening there, or find a way of being curious. What happens? Okay, something in me is not getting doing something. Something in me doesn't want to do it. Oh, what's that like? Saying hello to the judges and the critics, giving space from that. It's like, okay, really making an open invitation, just like Rumi's guest house poem. Welcome in that guest, welcome in that part of you that's like, I'm not doing it. So, we've looked a bit, yeah, just a little pattern, just to kind of where we've been. We've looked at, yeah, moving from I don't, or I want to and I don't get around to something in me, want to and something in me doesn't. So just moving into that sense of a bigger relationship to it. We've looked at general information about parts, how they are in focusing, and specifically the safety guardian, how it operates. We touched on critics and deeper knowing, also other ways in which things get blocked. And yeah, just pausing for questions before I do some final things. Is there anything I wanted to be asked?
Just around the rebellion one, I can't really connect with it. Is it something like I'm never going to be? That's never going to work out, or there's no point in doing that, or is it something like that, or?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I'm not that rebellious, so I don't. I find it a bit hard to answer. I will read you what Anne says here because it's just up on my computer. The pattern of rebellion. This is when the part of you that doesn't want to do an action is in a power struggle with the part of you that says you have to. And it's darned if it will give the other part the satisfaction.
Right. So it's like, you know, your mother tells you to do something and you,
yeah,
just, you don't want to do it because she told you to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not doing it because it's her that told me.
Yeah. Yeah. So very likely this kind of part is reacting to another part of you that's saying, you need to do this. You should tidy your room, you know, this kind of, you should answer your emails, you know. You should get around, so it's got somewhere there, it's got a should. Yeah, stubbornness, exactly, yeah. That's another label we have for this part of us.
Is there a specific pattern to do with excuses, or do excuses come into those four patterns? For example, I know you weren't making an excuse, but if somebody said, I have loads of clutter, but that's okay because I don't have time to tidy it because I have a child. But not everybody with a child has clutter. So you just, like, those excuses that we kind of make to justify something, would that to one of those other patterns, or would it be a pattern of its own?
It relates to all the patterns, I think. That's the kind of part of us that justifies, or something in this that tries to make it all right, finds a nice rationalization. I don't know what that is. I don't know if we ever have a name for that. Oh, I don't really want to find one right now. But yeah, it's a kind of part of us, definitely.
Like a soother part.
Something like that. It's a soother. rationalizer. Yeah, definitely we have these. And I find, and there's a qualitative difference between that and kind of just saying, actually, yeah, I really have a lot on at the moment. That stuff is important, but it can wait. It's okay. And the phrase, a phrase in parenting I come across is like, dirty floors, happy children. Right, because it's more important to prioritize the happiness of a child than it is to have a clean floor. So, and that makes sense to me when I hear it. I'm like, oh yeah, phew. then a kind of there's a qualitative difference between you know something's important and you're avoiding it, and when you hear yourself thinking it, it feels weak. It feels like an excuse. You know what? It has a quality to it, doesn't it? An excuse. I think when you hear it from someone else or yourself, and that's not to be judgmental of it, there's often a feel to it. It just feels like it's not the real reason. You know when someone's telling you.
And there's a blame almost.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. There can definitely be a blame, yeah.
I think what I'm hearing there is there's like a choice in something, in prioritizing, like I'm doing this because, and I'm not going to give myself a hard time because.
Yeah.
It's a priority, so there's a kind of an okayness about that.
Whereas yeah.
Whether there's a conflict, it's a real pull.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Yeah, it feels completely different. Exactly. Yeah. Like when we don't want to go somewhere and we find ourselves saying excuses, don't we? Like, oh, I'm too tired. And even someone asks you, oh yeah, well, I've got a lot to do. And you can just feel, you know, it feels incongruent. You know, you can feel that dissonance in your body. I can anyway. Like, I'm like, oh, now I'm lying to myself. And I still might not do it or might do, but there's a quality of like, okay. And again, I would be kind to it. Oh, something in me really doesn't want to go. For some reason, something doesn't want to go. And be curious about that. And maybe it's scared. Yeah.
So what was the fourth pattern?
Oh, yeah. So inner guidance. So that's coming back to this point that Alfie brought, which is something and you really knows, or actually you just worded it slightly different, Alfie, but like a kind of waiting for the right moment, waiting for kind of guidance or the kind of timeliness of something. And it's like something in your nose is like, this isn't the time.
Mm.
Okay. That is quite different. Again, has a definitely different feel.
Mm-hmm.
And all these can be felt because we can get below the surface. I mean, that's the kind of gift of focusing as we get below the labels.
Yeah.
So I want to end with just a very brief, touch on, in a way, if you're new to focusing, I'm not sure, I mean, some people here know focusing quite well, some people might be new, so just, and for the benefit of listeners later, just very briefly give a little overview of focusing. So focusing is in essence this practice of listening to this inner knowing that we have, that really deeply knows what's right for us. It has many forms, you know, there's natural form, it's like intuitive knowing. You have a feeling of rightness and you follow it. But yeah, but it's a practice. You can practice it on your own, you know, like in just touching in on it in your own, feeling into your experience, or you can do it in pairs. A lot of people do have focusing partnerships where you take it in turn to explore an issue with somebody listening empathically to you. A lovely way to practice it. And lots of applications. So, you know, you can use focusing to explore this kind of area, some blockage in your life. Or it could be a decision, you know, some kind of life direction. It could be some, you know, like really or healing trauma. Or it could be a creative project, something that you're really working with creatively. Lots of different applications. And I teach focusing on online courses and on in-person workshops on weekends, generally speaking. So I'll be sending out details of those in the afterwards tomorrow to anyone who's signed up for this seminar. So there'll be little pointers about what next for those of you who are newer to it, what next to do. So any questions on anything I've said tonight before we conclude? Okay, I'm going to just finish with that the end of the poem only started.
Sorry, Peter. Do you have any references, links, or something that we can read?
Not really directly. I mean, I'll have a look if there's something on Ansight, because there might be something there.
Okay, thanks.
I mean, it's embedded into her model of what they call untangling, and so a lot of it comes from there. But I'll see what I can find. Is there a handout? What you said? Simple answer is there isn't. But I might put the bullets in the tomorrow's email. A good idea. Next time, write that down. Great. Good, thanks everyone. Oh yeah, I'll end with a poem and then we'll just do that. So the rest of the poem, the second half, right. So actually, that's the last bit of poem. Start right now. Take a small step you can call your own. Don't follow somebody else's heroics. Be humble and focused. Start close in. Don't mistake the other for your own. Start close in. Don't take the second step or the third. Start with the first thing. Close in, the step you don't want to take. Okay. So thank you for accompanying me on this exploration. So I'll be sharing this, and feel free to share it with other people you want to as well, on social media or in any other way you get it. You'll get it through email as well, a link. So, and any questions about what I've said tonight, please feel free to follow that up as well. So see you around another time. Bye, folks. You can unmute yourself and say bye if you wish.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.